like to thank Paul for looking after us today and for making the sun shine. We had a lovely day looking around the court. Really looking forward to tomorrow as well with the performance. So I'll begin with one that hopefully I can just remember off the top of my head. We've got some music fans here, record collectors. I hope so, because I'm one. Yeah. I'm one of those anoraks.
Do you want me to come up the front?
Going, going, gone to the anorak over there. Ginger Baker's sweatbands, 50 quid a pair of finger cymbals as used on tiger feet, a platform heel broken by the bass player from Sweet. A battered Rickenbacker, a knackered Stratocaster, a set of marbled plectrums spanning the entire spectrum, Clapton, Blackmore, Frampton, Jimmy Page and Alvin Lee. Shamey old boy's fretwork ain't as sharp as what it used to be. Portly gents with ponytails and Womad t-shirts now too tight checked record sleeves for signs of wear. Get middle-aged kicks all through the night. A Pink Floyd widow rolls her eyes and sends an urgent text. OMG, you won't believe what's up for auction next. A reverential silence greets the opening of a crate. It's only Jimi Hendrix in cryogenic state. Paul McCartney's teapot, Lennon's glasses case, a square inch cut from Ringo's hanky, George's Georgian fireplace. Going, 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 gone. Put another record on. Rock and roll is knocking on. Going, going. Got a couple of poems from projects we've been doing, trying to big up Coventry really, because it's had a hard time over the decades, known as a bit of a concrete jungle, and we're on the up. This one's called Athena, and it's sort of memories of visiting, there was a big theatre in Coventry, and a small shop called The Poster Place attached to it, where all the kids went to buy their little button badges, and perhaps get their tickets for their first gigs and that kind of thing. It was just sort of plonked on to the edge of this mighty theatre. So it's memories of that. Athena. Do you remember the good old days of variety and music hall? Ken Dodd does. He's the jester holding court next door. You can hear the humming through the walls. Rounds of applause, rounds of matinee applause cascading down the decades. Me, I'm clacking through a fan of posters, thumbing past the wings of love. Construction workers perch for lunch on iron girders high above New York. I'm pausing at that tennis girl again. You know the one who stopped to scratch her arse. She doesn't look much like Virginia Wade. Athena is her name, I think. I didn't know what art was. I did my homework though, lining up the H's in the Who, learning where the arrows go, dreaming up new colour schemes for imaginary football teams, customising corridors, decorating desks. I perfected the selector logo. I could reproduce the Motorhead typography by heart. I liked their music well enough, but their fashion sense was slack. Give me mohair over leather, Fred Perry over green jack. So now I'm in the queue, clutching Tamla Motown badges. There's a bigger boy ahead of me. He smells of 1970. Regulation double denim, ginger locks and jip juice. Honda wings and furl along his shoulder blades above the Sabbath cross. Fingers rammed in stonewashed pockets, thumbs arranged like devil's horns. The poster place stuck out like bubblegum, a pod full of pop, blown from the mouth of the hippodrome, a bulge of Art Deco. But what did I know? I didn't know what architecture was. When I was very young, I used to think that everything in Coventry City Centre was circular, partly because we're surrounded by quite a brutalist ring road, so it's easy to go through Coventry without seeing it. So that was one. We've also got quite a famous round market as well, which is pretty cool. And outside the round market, there was a little merry-go-round as well. So I go shopping with my nan and end up really, really dizzy at the end of the day. Then there was a circular calf as well. Anyway, this one's called Magic Circles. With the last of the ashes blown, the city ceased to smoulder and reset itself in a concrete solar system where the ringway was the sun, the earth a retail market with a merry-go-round moon. Coins were stars falling down the wishing well on Broadgate Island, and a circular calf, a visiting craft from a neighbouring planet. Kilroy was here, rearranging the street furniture, deconstructing the signs, no barking, entrance in constant disuse, turban clear way. He rattles the can and sprays, voting changes nothing on the skin of a fuming snake that crunches its own tail. Then 5 years down the line comes the retort, neither does writing on walls. On a linking bridge, the baton is passed to a young free runner with a gleeful eye and an aerosol and a fondness for the puerile pun. He carefully blacks out the C from canal and the first two letters from basin. Even with the last of the asphalt down, bits of the old town walls still cling like stubborn milk teeth in the mouths of traffic tunnels. But sat behind my knickerbocker glory or stabbing a banana longboat into mush, I couldn't care less about the history. My daydream set the wimpy bar spinning and launch it like a saucer into space. Sticking with childhood, when we first moved house, I felt we were moving back in time, because we lived on a new estate, then we moved into the old industrial part of Coventry, where the factories were and the canals, that sort of thing. And everywhere I looked was older as a 7-year-old. This was about our back garden when we first moved in, the bird cherry tree. The bird cherry tree leaned against my bedroom window, blocking out the light, mulching autumn litter in the septic tank above the kitchen. Our dad said it must go. Its roots posed a threat to our foundations. The job was done, and yes, the sun shone in, but I was troubled by the eviction. It disturbed the infrastructure of my dream to clamber through the fruit trees in the yard, up into my room, never once touching the ground. This is from a reminiscence. My nan was a bit of a character. I think she used to make stories up about when they got pretty badly bombed where she lived in the industrial area. So there's a few stories. This is just a little impression from that. It's just called Tin. A bomb dropped down terrace, taking out 2.5 houses. In the spaces between dog barks, a tin can church bell shakes out the quarter hour. Acoustics are bad in this street, dull as a Tok-H lamp. The resonance is low, time slow. High up in an exposed pantry, cherry red and milky green, the Fowler's West India treacle tin stood up on the shelf where everybody left it, stuck where it had glued itself, bleeding sugared rust. This is another childhood one. This one's slightly darker. It's about a sordid little incident that took place when I was about 10. It's called Milk. One Sunday, in a wooden shed he'd knocked together himself, a fortnight after his mother had gone, his mad mum, she used to scream at the sink. She'd been taken away, is all they said. The ceiling and walls were chock-a-block with page 3 girls and the occasional centre spread. Just him and me in a shed full of tits. He spelled out the desired result of his experiment, S-P-U-N-K, as he shook out his elephant trunk into a milk bottle, already a quarter full. I could see he was a hoarder. Ever heard of it? Heard of it? Of course I had. I was nearly 11. I shook my head, sensing this to be the path of least resistance. Then he had a go on me. The week's top 20 counted down. Candles lit the fleshy walls. Hit me with your rhythm stick. I didn't know where to look. Up at the girls on the ceiling, down on the unwelcome hand. I fought invasive thoughts about his sister, her black banshee's eyes, torn tights and red tartan mini. But no milk was delivered. And he finally relented. Ah, you're just too young, he said. I don't know if it counts. As abuse, I mean. I never ticked that box, my victim. I could look him up, of course. I could track him down, drop by and knock him out on his own doorstep. But the invincible 10-year-old in me would sooner tip a pint of milk through the letterbox, stick his twos up at the window, feel the buzz, the rush, and run, scarper, free as the wind. Oh, other that was kind of inspired by my grandma. She's always stayed in my thoughts a great deal, although I was only 7 when she died, but she was a real character, and I found out not long ago that she was a good pianist. No one really knew, self-taught, just one of those family things that slipped out. I was working in a dementia home for a while, so it was also inspired by that. It's called Lost Keys. Look at the one with her head tipped back. See how she conducts herself. Someone said she used to play piano. Nobody knew. Imagine her lifting the lid, banging away in a cold back bedroom. Imagine her hours alone, shunning the warmth of the radiogram where the rest of the family gathered. And look at her now with her head tipped back, hands crabbed, hollow palmed, house spiders poised on haunches, stock still, till the chin hits the chest. A hammer blast from the brain snags the hands. Fingers explore the earth of an armchair. Storm-strung roots of arthritic oaks, how they scuttle and claw along the lost keys. Stand well back and leave her to compose. See how she conducts herself, how the fire works. And a couple of nature poems. This one, fortunate to win a prize for this one last year. It's just called To the Blackthorn, which, as you probably know, is the grows the sloes that you make the slow gin from. So, To the Blackthorn. Sour grape of the north, chrome of the woods in a wounding shore, you who wore the whitest blossom now bear the blackest fruit, the sloe that grows and ripens on a claw. Then nothing, only winter's grip unwinding. A missile thrush squeezes through the scrawl, sings dawn notes for the end of time, then raffles unscathed for the lemon glare of deliquescing sun until the thaw cracks the fist of winter. Mother of spring, stelliform masses frothing on the bough, you who bore the blackest fruit, you wear the whitest blossom now. This one was written in a sonnet form. I just thought I'd try that. It's called This Stretch of Land. From certain points of view, this quiet plot is bristling with life down to the core, a doggedly persistent trouble spot, embroiled in a constant civil war, where nettles battle dandelion spears, and cleavers crowd and hook the meadow sweet. Uncultivated now for 90 years, producing now to look at or to eat. From other points of view, this stretch of land that slumbered and disturbed throughout the war hints at something splendid, something grand, in frozen isolation, chaste and pure. This stretch of land is only inches wide, a terracotta pot turned on its side. So I'll be doing a few more, and then we'll.
Oh, okay. Good.
Till we get booted off, basically.
Sudden bellows through silence, gestures like fireworks, the twisted smile that can't find the confidence of a present, It's the boy in you, so close to the surface. The boy who seems to say, run. Run with me, throw off this cobweb prison of the present. Let's run to the green woods of our childhoods. Dig with sticks in the leaf loamy earth, searching for pirate gold. Make dens in which to run, run with me. Fall onto the soft ground, laughing like magpies. Hold my hand, taste this, blood packed, dances and chants. You are the arrow drawn with my pen from this brick room I'm sitting in, through all the grief and into that green wood, a den in which to hide, a wormhole to the past, a holloway, trees bent in tenderness. I'm reading this poem because Russ liked it and he made me promise to read it. Yeah, at last. It's called Old Ladies on Buses. He likes old ladies, we've established that. She finds them. Oh, steady on. She finds them drowsy with cold on pavements and gently lifts their thrumming furry bodies, pockets them and takes them home. She puts the bees to bed for the season, setting aside the memories of stings past. She floats them on cotton wool and they dream of wings in the airing cupboard. She watches them till spring when she releases them, little promises of sweetness kept alive all winter. The stories of old ladies on buses are like honey. They soothe the journey. We spoke about it kind of in advance, and we thought we'd do quite a few Coventry poems just to give you a flavour of what the place is like. And they're all really miserable, aren't they? We do really love Coventry. And I live in the red light district, which is sometimes challenging. And this poem references that. It's called Bindweed. Cloud white crinolined flower fairies, twining and choking. The girl on the grass curled, sleeping in the leaf-cut sun. Pleather pillow marking up her cheek. She's waiting to be kicked into unfurled service on the throw mattress, crusted yellow against the bindweed. Shed petals limp in the shadows, shed petals flying in the breeze. Seven cranes, single legs thrust deep into the crust of the chrysalid city, levered necks aching with weight, isosceles skies routinely segmented and jaws, snapping monstrous jaws, tearing and twisting joists and walls, skeletal iron dinosaurs, bringing to being a new world. Beware of change that happens too quickly, snowflake into avalanche, a murmuration, a dance. The city's under the salt from flattery, clothing itself in youth, plastic cladding, primary, colours rising from rubble, ashes, a new bird. Tweet, tweet. Oh, geez, my head's buzzing. Like a spider, I feel my links tugging, constantly tending the web around me, reeling in morsels of post-fact, growing fat with affirmations of various vacuous micro-judgments. Surely this is what they mean by living in the present, head down, consuming memes. I give good tweet, but I can't find peace. Following on Russ's theme of like looking at the city's history, the Blitz in the Second World War, and also past generations, this poem is called Generations, and it's part of the same series of poetry films that Russ did the Athena poem for, right? Yeah. We walk the same route, pretty much. I think I'll take him with me. My house is around the corner from where he used to live, where three generations of my family's women were born, tin-bathed and raised. The red light districts moved since his day, huddled inwards towards the city. Wheezing girls hacked by pneumonia as the nights grow colder. Some things never change, but now there are languages that through his ears sound strange-tongued and transient, cadences unintelligibly familiar to me. Shifting couples stay only long enough to move up and out. No shared lavatories to trip over neighbours to get to. This world won't be made to balance over cross-boundary washing lines. But people still chat and drink tea on their front steps sometimes. Children still play in the street. We continue past the swans, their long necks hooks in time, fixed points between us, past the pool he waltzed over frozen, horse chestnuts he knew as saplings, conkers no one plays with anymore, boinging off the playground. These days, I tell him, children's hierarchies are settled over screens. The paths now shadowed and pinioned by the ring road, arced and gardened. Me and him stomp up the hill past the old fire station Grandad was stationed in, to where for me the city centre starts, Primark. Surviving this identity crisis of constant reconstruction. He goes on, climbing stairs that now don't exist. Slowed by the leg he nearly lost in World War I, the stump his soft nose horses sniffed behind the front line, leaving me rising on an iron-toothed concertina looking for stuff for my daughter who needs a new size every time I turn around. And he steps up into the cold, tin-hatted, binoculared, wrapped and ready with his gas mask, marked with a W. Primark. Porthole pantheon of cheap clothing. Once it was Owen Owens, where I got lost as a kid, racked amongst racks of anoraks, flapping like a moth in panic. But the steps he climbs are in the Owens before that, just around the block, whose basement's all that's left. The Owens that burnt out, overlooking the carnage of a cathedral, in less of a Moonlight Sonata than a Beethoven's Fifth. With him, my W great-granddad, on the roof, conducting. And this one's called Blitz. This is about during the Blitz, my auntie was a little girl, a very little girl. My granddad was from Wales, so rather than being evacuated into some random place, they went back to his parents' house. They sent us away to the green hills, the cold, half welcome, the damp valleys and the warm bosoms, the bickering, the smiles and scowls and can't be doings, and I don't know why it is, but Mom isn't happy, and I can see the black looks and feel the nettled air prickle between them, so we come back to Cov. In-laws, Ma fumes. And I'm glad to be back with Dad, but when the sirens wail, the baby squirms, I feel a cold heart hand round my heart, and when the city burns, I see it from the window and think, that fire will never go out. Okay, 4 weeks ago, I had a heart attack. And so, for a while, I thought I wasn't gonna make it here. So, I'm really delighted to be here. And these are a couple of poems that I wrote in hospital. This one's called, I'll do this one first, Olive. Olive wants to go home. Of course she does. Her hair is silver, face rosebud, pale, touched with pink. Each gather in the petals, an achievement of entropy, cellular degradation, or smiles and frowns, expressions taken, given, the stuff we try to hide inside ourselves in this stuffy room, concerned only with the mechanics of living. The room that's failing, Olive. In the last 4 days, the grass has turned yellow and skin black, purple, ochre, birth bruised from trauma. It's been spat out, new you dependent, covered in the raised red circles of umbilical electrodes, reminiscent of cupping. medieval, med, medical, the sky, Mediterranean, and the subterranean illness visible on the surface only through these colours briefly before slipping back. New limits half set like jelly for testing by rude fingers. A legacy, a prologue that makes sense inside the story, found its way out, fits. But it's as welcome as these bruises, sits as comfortably as wire in the heart. So I think Russ is going to read just three more poems, and then it's me again.
Six minutes, which is now five, but I want a picture of you. Just pretend that I came. And as you're drawing her, I will cheat and take a quick stab with you. Thank you. Right, what's it? 6 minutes. I read this little one. This is a beer mat. On the beer mat is a poem that I wrote. This was the first one that I ever sent off for a competition, because I love the idea of having a poem on a beer mat. And I won. The theme was light, which you could take anywhere. They wanted 10 lines, so this is what I wrote. It's called How She Wrote Your Name. First, with a sparkler, a flick of the wrist in the dark back gardens of November. Once more with a bare heel curving the sand at Robin Hood's Bay, where ringed plovers pass. A 4-inch brush ahead of the roller, magenta on a virgin bedroom wall. Her first show in a white cube gallery, the crackle and buzz of luminous tubes. A click of a switch, your name in neon, light waves of love flooding the room. An exhibition last summer in Leamington Spa. They were during World War II. There were some camoufleurs, which is people that make camouflage, and they all gathered in Leamington Spa. It was like a well-kept secret. So they had all these sort of bohemian and surrealist artists coming in, making all this weird and wacky, like dazzle camouflage and that sort of thing, and netting to cover buildings and painting airfields to look like the tops of trees. Really weird stuff. Great if you're into art. So I'll just read a couple that were inspired by the paintings from there. So one of the paintings, it was just some guys out with a roller, as I say, just painting an airfield to look like a forest canopy. In the centre of this painting, there was just a red flag on their little machine, and it just reminded me of that Turner painting, if anybody knows, that famous red blob, where he went up against Constable and won the Royal Academy exhibition. It was all sea and sky, but they came back later and just put a red blob, which was a boy, a sea boy, on there. And it astonished everyone and really pissed off Constable. So this is called Snap. Lacking the audacity of Turner's boy, that red dab that brought Constable's blood to boil, a marker flag stabs the heart of an airfield, where flocks of puzzled gulls and crows alight. Two soldiers haul the tank and work the hose, spraying downy shadows over concrete meadows. The supervisors scribble notes, checking sample panels. The engineers point and mumble, turn their collars up, and talk of equalizing tones according to the fall of light. Ignition. And the sky is roaring ocean falls of shells. Leviathan bombers drone. Propellers, wheeling gulls and crows, break the blue horizon. The scarlet flag snaps alive, snarling at the storms to come. And one more from that. This was a picture. It was a room in a hospital, and there were nurses with these huge spools of sort of netting that they were unrolling to cover the buildings with. And it looked like something about the composition of the picture that looked quite religious to me. It's called A Quiet Industry. in a hospital room between emergencies and the usual rounds, the quiet industry of convalescent nurses crouching or kneeling, unrolling and threading fabric strips from spools the size of bicycle wheels through and through the netting, forming shell-like coils, amorphous avenues in olive green, sand and charcoal black. Across the road between high poles, two soldiers lay spread-eagled, silhouetting in the sky, pegging out the netting, turning factory to forest canopy, and finding here and there a wooden hairpin, a rabbit foot, a sprig of purple heather rolled in twists of silver paper. One more. This is written in the villanelle form, which is quite tricky because there's only two end rhymes and there's a lot of repetition, but quite pleased with this one. It's a love poem. It's called Phantom Roses. My brave young lover mitigates the sting of solitude and promises are made, but still the scent of phantom roses cling. The black dog slinks away and small birds sing in morning gardens, chanting down the shade. My brave young lover mitigates the sting. At dawn, my love will diligently bring the coffee pot, my favourite marmalade, yet still the scent of phantom roses cling. Our bond is vindicated with this ring, all faith in love restored and thus displayed. My brave young lover mitigates the sting. We set the seed of our inaugural spring, as one we rise and leave the bed unmade. It's still the scent of phantom roses cling. So this must truly be the very thing by which success in love is finally weighed. My brave young lover mitigates the sting, yet still the scent of phantom roses cling.
I feel like Val Dean again. Has anyone else old enough to remember him? It's been a long day. Okay, I was lucky enough to have this book published. It's called The Africa in My House. And so I submitted some poems to Silhouette Press, and the stuff that they wanted to publish was the stuff about Africa. I lived in Rwanda, in Central Africa, for 2 years. 5 years after the genocide, and then while I was there I got married, so I bought a piece of Africa home. So when I was looking for the title of my book, this cheesy concept occurred. I was kind of surprised that it was the Africa stuff that they were interested in, and it's kind of still a source of embarrassment to be a white person writing about Africa, but I feel better because Paul's in the room and he was born in Africa.
Born here.
You were born here, but you lived in Africa for a while, so. But you kind of know what I mean, right? Yeah. So this one's called Mzungu. Mzungu is like a term. It's used in a lot of Central and East Africa. And there's similar words actually in West Africa to mean like kind of white person or foreigner. You can still get called a Mzungu if you're black, if you're posh enough. But mostly it's white people. Porn star lottery win white girl sits in the African classroom and muses why pale is still considered best as she fields and asks for advances in a strange language. Aya feel glances from local women and thinks if I was raised like them on porn star patronizing unstained by sin lottery win white girls, I would hate me too. Porn star lottery win white girl sits in the corner with her African tea. Nido, so sugary it makes her teeth hurt and tries to smile politely when a new teacher arrives and waves a quick hello and turns around. She is so grateful to be normalized. He has her full attention. Public enemy white girl becomes teacher nicknamed Rasta white girl because she tries to be nice to everyone beyond social convention. It is a victory of sorts. Anti-Cinderella white girl marries Rwandan teacher in a ceremony to which the whole village is invited and they all come. Speeches are made, goats are eaten, beer is drunk. They don't call her Mazungu anymore. It's hard leaving Rwandan family and friends, people who survived and saw under her skin and past her early unthinking racism. She brings her husband home to England. Middle class white girl, which is at least true, walks her baby in the park and realizes that with her brown girl in the pram, she is now trashy, easy benefits class white girl. She is nigger loving traitor white girl, feels poison dripping words and burning glances and sometimes even bananas. Too white for you? Not white enough? You can think about her what you like. She'll still live happily ever after. Just don't try telling her. Colonialism's dead. So obviously, what with it being Rwanda and everything, the genocide is like a huge, casts a huge shadow over my experiences of Rwanda at that time. And this is about my first visit to a genocide site. It's hard to find your way sometimes past death's mask along the broken path back into a life. Through the classrooms of corpses, back to the car, through the shrieking cicadaed grass. Closing my eyes, I see the yellow, bloodless, black-pawed skin, flickering eyelashes, hear that last breath, and a lineup of bodies troops past, skulls stretched in silent screams. I'm searching for a memory of your smile, but I can't see past the emptiness it's left behind, or the lesson of those classrooms, the scars wearing the guide, whose family is in room 6. Are you kind of all city dwellers? Do you have family in the country?
Yeah, I do.
There's like some rural tradition here. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, cool.
I grew up in Mallow, so which is about 20 miles up the road.
In Rwanda, where my husband's from, is mostly subsistence farming, which is a problem if you get sick or anything happens to you. So obviously, if you can get out of that, it's a good thing. People don't really have farms, just sort of little plots. And the other thing, the other reason that I wanted to read this poem is because of the oral tradition in Ireland. And when I was in Rwanda, instead of like calling potatoes potatoes when they speak English, they always call them Irish potatoes, which I thought was really cool.
That's cool.
Yeah, they're always Irish potatoes. This was called Regression. That year, the rains didn't come. It was the last bad joke. I worked the thirsty earth till I bled into it my most bitter bile. Frustration threatening to make the crops taste bad. Sweat was poison to the soil. While others cackled, mocked this teacher's son, a student all my life, subsisting on air and sweat, shedding all his fat promises, growing muscles like tumours. But we turned those dead fields around. Bananas, leaves peeled back, shot up tumescent in their approval. And when the rains finally came, I spilled the last of my promise out, dancing in zombie ecstasy, writhing in mud. Become a squirming termite.